For his second discourse of this convention, Brother Mark has chosen a subject of encouragement. His title is, Lift Up Your Heads. Lift Up Your Heads. Brother Mark.
Hello again, brethren. I have a scary picture up there because I know it's after lunch and it'll wake you up a little bit. And I just want to again bring the love and the greetings of the brethren with whom we meet, Brother Michael Costelli and all the brethren in Mississippi, Sister Suzanne, and all they voted to send their love. So I want to make sure to do that again. And the remarks today are kind of prompted by continuing interest that I have had in the events in the world since 9/11, and of course before 9/11 as well. But some of the events in connection with the war, with society's reaction to the war, and with some of the government's edicts and proclamations and other things that have come down from the government, and perhaps how it might relate to some future events. I know there's a wide range of belief amongst the brethren on prophetic things, and of course I have no crystal ball, and we do see through a glass darkly on certain things. So a lot of this might be for informational purposes, and perhaps it will help us all to study and to understand not only where we are on the stream of time, but also what the sanctifying effect that some of these events should have on us as Christians. So it's kind of in a spirit of dialogue, and this is sort of a launching point. This scripture in Revelation, I probably won't be treating it greatly in depth, but it's sort of a launching point to start this discussion. And so, do you hear the thunder and the sea and the waves in society now? You know, when we turn on the TV, or we listen to the radio and we have news reports, I can almost hear the trumpet and the cries and the fears and the distress and the voices in the heavens and the anger. You know, all these things are going on around us, brethren. They have an effect on us. And so we want to make sure that the effect it has is the desired one, that we are to lift up our heads and we are to rejoice in our salvation. The subject today is prompted by a train of thought that's going on in the intellectual circles, not only in America but also in Europe, that academics and intellectuals and others in the world are looking at some of the things that the current U.S. administration has put forward, and has some changed laws and some things like that and added new ones. And some have compared what's going on with what happened before Hitler came to power and before Mussolini came to power and some other fascist governments. Now, this is not to suggest that it will happen in exactly the way they think it is. But I think it's important to know that there is a large, maybe not too large, but within the academic community, the intellectual community, the arts, people are starting to get nervous, so to speak, about the way that this administration seems to be moving to the right, and especially in conjunction with the military and the evangelicals that are comprised somewhere around 40 or 50% of the military. So those in the world believe that there's been a sea change in the American government. So we want to look at a few things that they're saying and maybe how they relate to scriptures. They've identified 14 characteristics that governments that are starting to close down, that they all seem to take. And we'll look at what some of the observers are saying. We'll also try to look at some of the types of the church's last experiences in connection with these. And then, of course, what lessons we can learn. I do want to say that I have not yet saw the DVD from Brother Goodman about how to put a PowerPoint presentation together, so it may be a little bit wordy, and I'll try just to summarize it, so I do apologize in advance for that. But and also we'll take a look at what deceptions might occur in connection with this. So basically, in nations that have succumbed to fascism, there's steps. There's a definite series of steps. Things have to be accomplished before that government can assume control. So there's almost like a laundry list of things that have to be done. Martial law, dispatching armed soldiers, control of the press and the media, tightening limits on travel, and taking activists into custody. There's several things that have to be done. And just by way of informational purposes, let's look real quickly at what Hitler did. But I think we all know Hitler's rise to power was not haphazard, that he did have definite steps. And just some of the highlights is that he suspended habeas corpus. And that has happened last year in the Military Commission Act in the United States, enabling the government to incarcerate more people without any type of trial or any really due process. They can pretty much just grab someone, a person of interest, and put them away. And so we've seen in Guantanamo that has happened. Also, another highlight of this is there was the Reichstag fire, which was used as a pretext for Hitler to further impose his move toward his government. And Mussolini, of course, came along before Hitler. He had a state nearly a decade earlier than Hitler. And his background is somewhat interesting. We don't have time to go into it now, but he was a novelist, and he was against the Catholic Church in Italy. And he, through the events of his life, he maneuvered his way into government, and he set up a right-wing government in Italy. And the opposition parties were basically ineffective. And he was successful in establishing a police state. And so he had certain steps that Hitler later followed to establish that police state. There is a fellow named Sinclair Lewis, who was a novelist in the United States. And this quote of his: "Let me tell you something. I've seen fascism up close and personal. Not if, but when it comes to America, fascism will be wrapped in the American flag and carrying a cross." That's quite a famous quote that Sinclair Lewis had. He wrote a book, and he won a Pulitzer Prize, or I'm sorry, a Nobel Prize in Literature. And this book was called It Can't Happen Here, and it was a novel about the election of a fascist U.S. president. Has anybody read that book by any chance? Any of the brethren read that book? It was quite a while back. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. But it's quite interesting. Here's a poster that I found that when they were showing the play. And it was a warning that political movements can come to power in countries such as the United States when people blindly support their leaders. You know, we've largely left the running of the American government to lawyers and politicians. Common people don't really know what their rights are, don't really know what's in the Constitution. Of course, as brethren, we're not political. I'm certainly not. But to look at these events, we have to discuss politics to a point. So when people abdicate the responsibility of self-governance, then that leaves sort of a vacuum for unscrupulous men to move into. So some people do believe that this process of undermining democracy and establishing a fascist government has begun in the United States. Now, again, this is mostly for informational purposes. I'm kind of a believer in that not to veer too far to the right or to the left. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's probably some merit to some of these charges. But I'm certainly not saying that these things will occur in exactly the way that the intellectuals believe they will. But I think it was interesting enough of what they believe to examine it. So no political endorsement here. And as one brother said, "Do you want your dragon to be red or blue?" But that was good. Brother David Duran said that. And that's a pretty good way to put it. And this is a website, Old American Century, where I got a fairly good bit of this stuff. And I thought that was pretty clever. Of course, nobody wants to be seen as promoting anything like fascism. But, again, those on the left are becoming convinced that it is. So the term fascism is derived from the word fascio, which literally means a bundle of sticks. So, and it's reference to a corporate structure. uniting politics, industry, and labor as a coherent unit. There's a quote ascribed to Mussolini that fascism should be called corporatism because it's really the marriage of corporations, government, and industry in order to control the working people. Another term that has been coined in connection with this subject is Christo or Christo-fascism. I won't read all that, but basically what it means is that there are several movements that are identified as Christo-fascist movements. One of them is the Christian Identity Movement in the United States, some Islamic fundamentalism, some militant forms of Jewish nationalism, some Hindu nationalism, and a variety of others. But many people feel that comparing their religion to Nazism or other forms of fascism is very offensive, and it is very offensive. And I'm not necessarily comparing any one religion to that. But this is, like I say, by way of information. So the 14 points of fascism are as follows, and they're from the oldamericancentury.org. If anyone's interested in any more of this, I have a lot of it linked on a site, and I can send that to you if anyone's interested. All right, well, one of the first things that we looked at was a powerful and continuing nationalism. They tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos and symbols. You see flags everywhere. I didn't know this, but George Bush has a doll. He's a fighter pilot doll, which is especially ironic since he avoided military service in the Vietnam War. It may not be so much apparent here, but where I live, there's flags everywhere. Stickers, flags, you know, support our troops, yellow ribbons and everything all over the place. So probably in certain sections of the country you would see this type of thing more than other sections. I spoke to some brethren in the Northwest, and they were interested in it. They said, well, we just don't see much of that stuff up there. And so I said, well, come on down to the South sometime, because that it does appear to be sort of where the groundswell of this type of thinking comes from in the evangelical fundamentalist kind of areas of the South, where particularly the Southern Baptist Convention. The Southern Baptist Convention is basically the state church of the old Confederacy. And they have a lot of power and a lot of influence in politics in the South. So brethren in the other parts of the country may not see this in the same way, and which is fine. But, you know, if you ever want to come down and visit, I'd be glad to take and show you around a little bit. So what we have, this is a quote from Brother Russell here. I found it interesting that he said that the world would try many patchings, various degrees and schemes of socialism and nationalism. But none of these will do. The patches upon the old garment will only make its rents the more numerous and its unfitness for patching the more apparent. So Brother Russell recognized that there would be schemes like that. But what do the scriptures say? Well, not directly, but in Amos 5:19, the scriptures do say that as if a man did flee from a lion, and some brethren feel that the lion would represent British colonialism. Their symbol was the lion. And a bear met him, which the bear would represent communism. Russia is always called the Russian bear. Or he went up into a house, and the house there would represent nationalism. That the mankind, after trying these various forms of government, would finally retreat into the house of nationalism. But see what happens. He leans his hand on the wall and a serpent bit him. So we see that no system of government that men are able to come up with will address the problems that mankind is facing. Only God can do that. As Psalm 46 tells us, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried in the midst of the sea. So the one lesson we can learn from this, brethren, is to increase our trust and faith in the Lord, because He has the events that are occurring around us. They're under His direction, and He can permit things to go as far as need to be, or He can stop them when they need to be stopped. So our trust is in the Lord ultimately for all of our affairs. And a second step would be disdain for the recognition of human rights. Because of fear of enemies and the need for security, people are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. So people tend to look the other way and approve even of torture. And I've talked to people who say, well, you know, if they're doing that kind of thing, they need to have it tortured out of them, and we need to be able to find it. And there's a certain amount of logic to that. But we're trying to look at things from a Christian point of view. And from a Christian point of view, the scriptures are a little different on that subject. You know, Isaiah tells us, I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. So, and of course, probably the most well-known text out of the whole Bible would be John 3:16. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. So in the scriptures, we do see the worth of the individual to God, and that every bad thing that has happened to individuals throughout history will be remedied in the kingdom. And so that's the time that we're waiting for. Brother Russell does talk about human rights, but mostly he makes the point that we should give up our earthly rights, that we give up our earthly rights in order to lay down our lives in sacrifice to be a part of that blessed nation that will, the heavenly nation that will bless the families of the earth. So we'll give up those rights, but the world of mankind will have full human rights throughout eternity. All right, the third point to identify this perhaps emerging government would be identification of enemies and scapegoats. People are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate perceived common threat. And right now it seems to be liberals. If you look in each one of these books, there is reference to liberals. That's defeating liberalism, how liberals are waging war against Christianity. So you can hear the drumbeats against liberals. And it's worth noting that liberals and academics were targeted in Nazi Germany before the Jews were. So they recognize that they have to get some of these people, liberals, who seem to be more interested in human rights. They need to get them out of the way. But what do the scriptures say? From a Christian viewpoint, if thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. If he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee. So we see that the scriptures have a different take on enemies and the way that Christians are supposed to deal with enemies. I understand that the United States as a nation, as a corporate body, as a governmental body, does not adhere to the tenets of Christianity as we understand them. Yet, the president makes a claim to be a born-again Christian and talks a pretty good game about it. But it does appear that the actions do not quite go along with that. All right, well, the supremacy of the military is another is another factor in this establishment. If you'll look and see here, the military budget for fiscal year 05, $421 billion. If you add all these other ones up underneath it, they come to maybe about half of what is spent on the military. The case has been made that the United States could have released a lot of that money for programs. In other words, to sort of, how do you turn an enemy into a friend? Well, you can either kill them or how do you eliminate your enemies? You can make them a friend or you can just kill them. So many people have made the point that if some of that money that has been spent on the military would have been plowed back into some of the areas of health and international affairs and perhaps even economic development and even some other countries, that we might not be in the shape we are. But this does speak a lot. You really see the disparity between the military spending and everything else. It's way, way, way out of proportion. And so, I'm not necessarily trying to criticize the government. I'm looking at this from a Christian point of view. You know, if we were truly Christian and we had control of power, would we spend the money in the same way? And I would hope not. All right, so again, supremacy of the military. Fox News had a segment on killing Social Security to have more money for the military. The military have coined a new coin here, and if you can see that, It's put on the full armor of God and defend the faith. Ephesians 6:11-13. That just came out, and it's a medal for our military. So, you know, people who think that there's no evangelicalism in the military, I think you'd have to look at this medal and see probably that's not so. Another couple of things here is that America has about 1,000 military bases around the world, which really fits the definition of an empire. The official count is about 750, but the Institute, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation estimates it at about 1,000 bases around the world. And by the way, the Army, there's one more here. Army of One has been displaced by a new slogan, which is Army Strong. I guess Army of One wasn't really getting the recruits to come in like they thought it would, so they've changed it to Army Strong. But, of course, you know, the scriptures tell us that Jesus said that my kingdom is not of this world. And so, you know, our weapons are not carnal for the Christian. So, again, we see the disparity between the teachings of Jesus and the actions of the so-called Christian nation. Number five in this process is a rampant sexism. Under fascist nations, they are male-dominated, and they attend to traditional gender roles. Opposition to abortion is high, as is homophobia and anti-gay legislation and national policy. Now, this is not to in any way condone any of these activities, but just to point out that it is a hallmark of these closing societies that they tend to start targeting homosexuals, academics. Women are to stay at home. We recognize there's truth to that in the scriptures, but you know, on the other hand, there are situations where that just can't happen. And so, in these societies, though, they do really try to enforce traditional gender rules. And I'm not saying that in particular is wrong, but it is a hallmark of this movement. But Galatians tells us that there is neither Jew nor Greek, neither bond nor free, neither male nor female, for you are all one in Jesus Christ. So, Brother Russell wrote in the sixth volume that we must esteem others in Christ as new creatures, be kindly affectionate toward all, seek to serve all, and know no partiality amongst the brethren. This is a promise keepers meeting here. If you can see, those are all men. No women are allowed at the promise keepers meeting. And so they're all about you know, the father figure and everything, which is good. I mean, that's the way we're supposed to be. But it's been carried to the level of a mass movement in conjunction with these other trends. So the media is controlled, directly sometimes, but also indirectly, by government regulation or sympathetic media spokespeople and executives. Censorship is very common. And here's some examples. Fox News found Stuart Libby not guilty of lying to Congress. He was not guilty on one count. He was guilty on four counts. But I see they left that out of there. There are several organizations that are watching Fox News. They feel that it's basically just the propaganda arm of the government. There's something that was kind of clever. I won't read all that, but Brother Russell here does say that the events could mean the eventual slavery of the masses to a plutocracy. I had not ran across the phrase plutocracy before, so I looked it up. But he has a very interesting thought here. Voters have no thought of anarchy, but as they become enthused by the socialist propaganda, or we could say this propaganda, they will be led step by step to one and another extreme of word and deed to bring it about. So Brother Russell had some kind of, at least of an idea of some of the trends that were developing. And a plutocracy means rule or power of wealth or of the wealthy, and then there's a couple of other definitions. And I think that in the United States, the term is the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. All right, number seven in this progression would be obsession with national security. You know, fear is used as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. And we've had our terror alerts, and some have made the claim that those are almost useless except to get the people whipped up into a frenzy about the state of readiness. So we see a real emphasis on law enforcement. The law enforcement, the military, are almost put up on a pedestal as being above reproach in these societies. Interesting thing here, I don't know if anyone has seen the show 24. I've never seen it. But several of Homeland Security people met with the producers of the show 24 to run PR for the War on Terror. And I think that the show is a lot of terrorist activity. And as a matter of fact, the charge has been made that some of the torture at Guantanamo was taken from the show 24. And, of course, the show 24 is on the Fox network. But what does the Scripture say? Sanctify the Lord of hosts himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. So we are not to fear these things that the government tries to worry us. We're to lift our heads and put our faith and trust in the Lord. All right, number 8 would be religion and government are intertwined. Governments in fascist nations tend to use the most common religion in the nation as a tool to manipulate public opinion. So I think the most common religion in the United States right now would be Christianity. I guess we would call it nominal Christianity, both branches of it. We see a lot of the patriotic religious themes. There's George Bush speaking at a religious rally. And, of course, the book, I think I referenced it last year, called American Theocracy by Kevin Phillips. He makes the charge that the government has used the religious right to gain power and to institute some of these repressive measures that we've seen come about. Of course, the Scriptures have a different take on it. You know, Jesus answering them said, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's." And they marveled at him. So we see and the Scriptures teach a definite disconnect between government and religion. And the founders of the United States saw that too. You know, there's a movement afoot to rewrite the events that led to the founding of the United States. Many in the religious right are trying to make the founding fathers out to be evangelicals. And of course, we know from history that that's just not the case. Thomas Jefferson didn't believe in the Trinity. Most of them were deists, which meant they, from what I understand, they recognized the existence of a supreme being, but they did not try to impose their views on everyone else. And so we're very thankful for that. But we do see a shift, I think, in the thinking of the United States now, especially amongst those in the homeschool movement and some of the conservative movements, and that they're trying to buttress their position for wanting to be more involved with politics by saying, well, the founding fathers were just like us. They were evangelical fundamentalist Christians. And, of course, that doesn't bear out in scrutiny. This is interesting. Really quickly, I just had to put this in there because I ran across it and I thought it was so good. But this is if Bush's campaign TV commercial was running against Jesus. Jesus of Nazareth says, give to him who begs from you, and do not refuse him who would borrow from you. And it says, Jesus favors more government handouts for welfare cheats. It's very, very telling the way they compare. You know, Jesus is soft on crime because he says, judge not that you not be judged. Jesus of Nazareth says, render therefore unto Caesar's the things which are Caesar's. Jesus will raise your taxes. So they compare the teachings of Jesus with what seems to be happening in the administration today. This is another example of the churches and the governments combining. This is John Hagee. I think he's been airbrushed a little bit in that picture, possibly. But I think perhaps some of you are familiar with him. The Christians United for Israel. By the way, I talked to Brother Paul Agnew, and I guess this will be out in the Bible Students newsletter, but he mentioned that they had done some tracting at the Night to Honor Israel in Washington, D.C. last month. Has anyone heard that? Nobody here went, I guess. He said they had about 8 brethren who were able to give out many of the Israel Point with Destiny and Israel Fulfilling Bible Prophecy to the attendees at the Night to Honor Israel that was in Washington, D.C. So we see that the brethren are very quick to jump on these opportunities to spread the truth and to support Israel in a real way. A lot of these people, especially this guy and several that are like him, they want to support Israel so they can bring about Armageddon. And you know, God certainly doesn't need that kind of help. One thing that's very interesting in the in this whole discussion of religion and government, when Katrina happened, a private army called Blackwater, which I'll get to, went into New Orleans and was patrolling the streets. Well, the one thing that the government wants to do is to enlist the clergy into quelling dissent. Certain clergymen in several counties, or many counties throughout the Southeast, have been contacted, according to these sources, and have been asked to preach on Romans 13, about government being established by the Lord. And many have decided that they would do that and say, yes, government is established by the Lord. And the point being there would that they would be able to help calm the people in event of any kind of emergency, and that they would also be like go-betweens between security forces and the community. If some believe this is a way that they want to get people to give up their guns, especially like in the South and in the West, where I think gun ownership is like 80% of the people have guns. So some feel that that's a way to get those guns away. There's George Bush right after Katrina. And then here's also some army guys and some police that were at a prayer. This is supposedly at some type of prayer meeting. All right, number 9, corporate power is protected. The industrial and business aristocracy of a fascist nation often are the ones who put the government leaders into power. So they want to get paid back. We can see here, this is the percent of federal tax collections from individuals and corporations. Corporations are the blue. They've gone down steadily, the amount of taxes they pay. Individuals have gone steadily up. So we see that the corporations are receiving tax breaks and other kind of breaks, while the individuals are bearing an increasing load of taxation. Here's from Business Week, too much corporate power. And there's the American flag with all the logos of the different companies. But I won't read all that, but that's, of course, James 5, talking about come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries which are coming upon you. So we see that the Bible has a different take on the poor and the downtrodden than the powers that be seem to have. All right, number 10, labor power is suppressed because the organizing power of labor is the only real threat to a fascist government. Labor unions are either eliminated entirely or severely suppressed. The UAW has steadily declined in membership over the years. A little bit of a spike there when the Democrats were in power, I think, but basically going downhill. The unions are becoming increasingly are becoming less important. And in Mississippi, Mississippi is experiencing a sort of economic boom. But what they're attracting is they've attracted Toyota, Nissan, Eurocopter, a steel mill. A brand new state-of-the-art steel mill is built about 15 miles away from my house because Mississippi is a non-union state. So they can hire people down there to work for a whole lot less than they could up in perhaps Pennsylvania, or some state that still has a union, or Illinois, for example, that still has unions presence, although that's being diminished as well. So the people in power are not interested in having unions. Many states in the South are quite anti-union, and this is a union demonstration. But, of course, the scriptures have a different story. Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. We know that God cares for man, and not only for the well-off. Of course, he loves each one of mankind, and Jesus died for each one. So we see that, of course, the coming government under the control of Christ will be much more equitable and just. All right. Number 11 would be disdain for intellectuals in the arts. They start to crack down on artists because they're more free thinkers. This is a sort of a periodic table that was developed by some scientists that showed the level of government interference. And they're color-coded. I know it's hard to see. They're color-coded. The green ones are the environment, where there have been initiatives by science to address problems like global warming, Superfund, toxic sites, and many of these programs have been absolutely gutted under the Bush administration. There's basically no money left to clean up Superfund sites. There's basically just enough money to run the apparatus to where it looks like something is being done. But not very much is being done right now. And the artists from all over the world are being refused entry to the United States. All right, there's an obsession with crime and punishments in these closing societies. Under these regimes, police are given almost unlimited power to enforce law. People are usually willing to overlook the abuses and even forgo civil liberties in the name of patriotism. So here's just some examples of protests and things that have been going on. I think this was in Seattle. In connection with this, it's been in the news lately, Blackwater. You may have heard this. But they're a private, I've called them a private Christian mercenary army. Now, they don't want to be called mercenaries, but in fact what they do is mercenary activity. And they do claim to be a Christian company. And so there's their logo. There's been several books written about them. They operate in Iraq right now, and I think you might have heard last week they were responsible for killing a bunch of Iraqi civilians, and the Iraqi government wants to kick them out of Iraq. But the United States doesn't want that to happen because we're so strained for troops to serve that they need these private military contractors to be there. And this was in New Orleans after Katrina. These are not government soldiers. These are private mercenary soldiers that operate in conjunction with the Homeland Security Department. So Chris Hedges is also a famous man who is watching this rise as well. And he basically says if there was ever a successful politicization of the military, that would signal the end of our democracy. So this is not just, you know, one or maybe a few crazy Bible students that are coming up with this stuff. There's many people that feel that something is going on with the direction that the government's going on. Taking. So this is the president of Blackwater. His name is Eric Prince. He's a multimillionaire, and he has really poured a lot of money into Blackwater. 25,000 mercenaries, that's hard to pin down. Some say there's more. You know, some say there's less, but there's at least that many. I won't read all that, but basically those are bullet points that Blackwater is concerning Blackwater. The only one I will read to you is that the average U.S. soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan makes $7.50 per day. A Blackwater soldier makes $600 per day. So you have soldiers, you know, if soldiers get a little too heavy, they'll discharge them. So what's happening a lot over there is they just eat and don't exercise. They get a little too heavy, they get a discharge, and they join Blackwater. And all of a sudden they're making $500-something more dollars a day, doing pretty much the same exact thing. Blackwater has bases in the United States, has one in Moyock, North Carolina, which is about 7,000 acres. It's got one in Illinois, in Mount Carroll, and they're building one in San Francisco. And it's interesting, they'll have both coasts. They're also wanting to build some along the Gulf Coast and in the Philippines. So some people feel that it's not necessary to have them in the sort of the heartland of the South, because if there is any kind of trouble, the people in the South will probably go along with the government a little bit easier than people in other places will. This is a prayer service. Blackwater, I'm sorry, I'm moving on from Blackwater here. These soldiers received a care package. They're called the Freedom Packages, and in that package were Bibles and proselytizing materials in English and Arabic, and an apocalyptic computer game, which Soldiers for Christ battle satanic global peacekeepers. So these guys go out and they fight all day. They come back and they want a little relaxation, and they look in their care package and there's a video game so they can shoot some more. This is a screenshot from that video game that they sent the soldiers. It doesn't look a whole lot different than what they do every day. This is from that Left Behind game. Several things that these closing societies do is they develop a thug caste. You know, in Florida in 2000, young Republican men were dressed identically, and they menaced poll workers. They were trying to upset the results of the election. All right, so there's rampant cronyism and corruption. They're always by their friends. Fascist governments always get people they can trust. It doesn't matter so much about competence, but you've got to have trust. And I think we saw something similar to that in the firing of the U.S. justices that weren't sufficiently loyal to the administration. And of course, you've all seen Alberto Gonzalez, you know, not being able to remember anything about that. And so we see that. This government has tried to put people in place that are more ideologically in line with their thoughts. Now, that's just a little poster there, kind of detailing some of the crimes: bribery, conflict of interest, obstruction of justice, ethics violations, embezzlement. I think we all have heard on the news lately about the problems that the party is having. So fraudulent elections would be the last point of this closing society. And sometimes elections are a complete sham. Other times they're manipulated. Fascist nations also typically use their judiciaries to manipulate or control elections. So in England, this is a pretty famous edition of the Daily Mirror. How can 59 million people be so dumb? Was the 2004 presidential election stolen? My own personal opinion is that it was, and many other people feel that it was as well. As a matter of fact, in Ohio, I think it was 2 months ago, about 80 poll boxes have just disappeared because there was a suit filed to recount the elections in Ohio, but all those ballots have disappeared, so there's no way to count those now. It's very convenient. I won't read all that. Too much text on the slide. I'm sorry about that. But just the one in blue, this is about Diebold. They're the ones that make the touchscreen voting machines. They have no paper trail. There's no way to verify that what's coming out of the machine is the same that you put in by the voters. They can have it programmed that if you vote for a certain candidate, when it goes to the main computer, it's another candidate. There's really no way, if you don't have a paper ballot, to go back and count these things. None of the international election observers were allowed in the polls in Ohio. I thought that was interesting, since Ohio and Florida were the two states where the election results were contested. All right, well, let's look at what some observers are saying. The travel rights are being restricted. This fellow here, Lawrence Britt, has written a book called Fascism Anyone, and he says, we have a free press, supposedly, honest election, supposedly, but maybe not. You know, maybe not. That's a little bit too much to read, but the main point of this is that Islamofascism is a term that you'll be hearing, if you haven't heard it yet, Islamofascism. But there's no sense in which the jihadists embrace fascist ideology, as it was developed by Mussolini. It's a way of arousing strong emotion and tarnishing one's opponent, but it doesn't tell us anything about them. The jihadists just want their religion to be paramount. They want their religion to be the one that everybody follows. And, well, that's the same thing as many in a small, significant part of the Republican Party want. They want, Christian values. Well, we like Christian values, too, but we don't want to take that too far. So, the term Islamofascism, Rudy Giuliani says it all the time. It's just a talking point. It really doesn't identify anything, and it really doesn't mean anything. All right, that's way too much. That's the next slide, I see. So anyway, I just want to mention the types of the church's last experiences. Elijah, of course. He was taken off the scene by a chariot of fire, representative of the spiritual glory and exaltation. And, of course, John the Baptist was restrained soon after the delivery of his message. Brother Russell makes this point. Scriptures seem to point out that in the time of trouble approaching, the nominal churches, professedly virgins of Christ, will be on the side of the kings of the earth and united to them. And that's point number 8 in the points that we've been going through. Also, Brother Russell said that labor organizations will be restricted. So he looked forward and saw that not only labor, but also publications which advocate their rights, and also the truth publications would be sometimes perhaps targeted. And there's just getting ready for a protest. So what lessons can we learn from these things that we see? Bible students are looking from the standpoint of the Word of God, see clearly that the Great War, he said in Europe, Brother Russell did, but we can look at this war, will utterly wreck the participating nations, that they will have no strength for further combat, no gold reserves, called war chests for military purposes. And the United States is spending about $2 billion a day on the war, is the figure that I heard. So, basically, Brother Russell tells us to lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh, and the inauguration of Messiah's kingdom. So that's what we are looking for. And just to touch on the scripture again of the Revelation 16, 13, and 14, this whole discussion is just sort of a way of moving into to see where we are on the stream of time. I know some brethren feel everything's in the past and has already happened, and certainly that's a view held by superior students of scripture, and I certainly would not want to argue that point. I feel differently. I feel the church has experiences that are still in front of us. One thing in connection with the giving life to the image of the beast and perhaps turning into the false prophet would be the interaction between the Lutheran Church and the Episcopalian Church or the Anglican Church. And these are just a couple of headlines along that way. Has granted the Evangelical Lutheran Church has granted the first exception to a policy that only bishops ordain clergy, a key component of full communion. And perhaps full communion will be something akin to apostolic authority that the image of the beast might get. So when these things come to pass, of course, look up and see your redemption draweth nigh. Brother Russell says to keep a little food on hand, coal on hand, and a little reserve of something like beans, wheat, or corn, or other staples. So he was given a little bit of practical advice there. And we could probably use that as well. So if there does arise a strong-armed government in the United States, according to history, there needs to be some future significant event that would allow the implementation of martial law. This is just a suggestion that I've been thinking about, and I've talked to some brethren about it. I'm not saying that this would happen, but we do know that evil men and imposters shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And what deceptions might occur? Well, we see some of these people here who have historically caused deceptions throughout the gospel age. Of course, the papacy has responsible for many deceptions, and I think you know some of these others who put forth false doctrines of healing and prosperity. I think you've seen these. 2 Peter tells us that this, Brother Russell comments on 2 Peter, that this class will be found principally among the teachers of the church and chiefly at the end of the age. I wanted to show this online, but I wasn't able to get an internet connection here. This is a screenshot of a girl who had been through a prank. The website's up there if you want to watch it. Prank 316. It's a Christian organization that pulls pranks on people. I'm not sure that's really a good thing, but they had a setup where this girl had always read the Left Behind books. She loved the Left Behind books. They had it set up so that everybody was in on the trick but her. When she left the room, it was like a cafeteria. When she came back, there were people's clothes all over the floor, and they were all gone. There were two or three people wandering around, said they just disappeared. And that's her reaction when she believed that the rapture had occurred. And you can see the agony on her face and the fear. And imagine if that were multiplied by millions of times. You know, the Left Behind series has a readership of some say 60 million. 60 million books sold to people who hardly even read. So they are well-versed in this rapture theology. And as a suggestion, the technological ability is there to make some type of event like this appear plausible, appear as having occurred. Now, of course, I'm not saying it will occur. I'm saying this is one thing that could possibly occur that would allow the government to kind of move in and take over. Not that it will, but only that the technological ability is there to make something like this happen. So there are a few books on the subject. Some think that the government wants to stage something like this so they can inaugurate a new government. And the suggestion has been made that the legendary pillar of fire and smoke which accompanied the Israelites may have been a technological phenomenon. Perhaps someone was up there creating a smoke bomb. I don't believe that. I believe it was God's presence that was leading them. But the fact is that some people do believe that they can help out future events. So we're not to be deceived by what our eyes might see. This is, again, mass marketing of the rapture. And my degree is in advertising. I don't tell everybody that because I'm not real proud of it, but it is in advertising. And I find it interesting that the little kid's got his shirt all ripped, but nobody's dirty, you know. So if they're, yeah, it's just one of those things I happen to notice. But this is, again, there's millions and millions of kids that have been raised on this teaching. And there's also an example that the skater Katarina Witt was removed during her figure skating. She went up in the air and she disappeared. And it was shown at a conference on satellite imagery. So the technology is there to even now, from my understanding and what I've been able to find, that the technology is there to take people out of a live feed. You could have a live TV feed. And the computer software and power is such now that they can interpolate the pixels that surround this person, and they can make up a background almost instantaneously. So the technological events are the technological efficiency is there, and ability is there. And this is just a screenshot from one of their sites that shows what they expect. They expect the rapture, and they expect people to literally leave the earth and meet Jesus in their fleshly bodies. But of course, we have a different view. If any man say unto you, lo, here is the Christ, or there is a Christ, or here, believe it not. Because Jesus does not come in the flesh. He doesn't come as a man. The man Jesus paid the ransom price. If we are faithful, we will see the Lord in our spiritual bodies because we will see him like he is. So, brethren, let's continue to hold the truth as we have received it from the pastor and to know that whatever deceptions are permitted to come upon the earth, will not move us from our understanding that we have received. Let us continue to lay down our lives on behalf of the brethren, and let us continue to emulate Jesus and follow in his footsteps. And any of these deceptions that may possibly occur at some point in the future will not impact us, and that we would be found faithful. And may the Lord add his blessing and overrule anything said or done amiss.